We'll call the meeting to order. I don't know if we've got a quorum, but I'm sure people will straggle in. First on the agenda, House Bill 1017, Representative Cox. And I don't think we can officially move your bill yet, Representative Broadbent. I promise you that even if you get done quickly, that Representative Nornitz will move your bill for possible inclusion after you leave, if that's the way we have to do this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to the committee, and weren't you harassing me and taxing me, I think?
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I think I was supporting you.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. Mr. Chairman, I did have an amendment that I had brought down. I'm not sure. Is it handed out to
yes,
the committee?
Yes, I believe everyone has it. The DE1 amendment.
And this, Mr. Chairman, will change the character of the bill quite a bit, but the last part of the amendment is very similar to the bill that was originally introduced. Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure. Do you want me to just talk about the new amendment in its three parts? There's just three parts to this bill, and then I can maybe get to why the bill is before us.
Okay. Go ahead. Why don't you discuss the amendment?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, this amendment has three components to it. The first part of the bill is just making it clear that it is the authority and the responsibility of the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources that they should be removing debris in lakes in times of natural disasters. The second part of the bill is setting up a fund from which they can use those dollars to do this cleanup, this lake cleanup. And then the third part of the bill, Mr. Chairman, is a direct appropriation. I think this one is the one that is most connected to your committee, an appropriation to the county of Lesueur County for the purposes of lake cleanup based on a tornado that came through our area in August.
Any questions of the author on the amendment? I guess I would then have to refer this bill to the DNR, Natural Resource Finance Committee from here. I assume I've got to go back to Finance or back to Representative Murphy's committee, then back to the full Finance and back down to DNR Finance, and then who knows what's going to happen. So,
Mr. Chairman, I'm more than happy for this bill to go wherever it needs to go because I do think it's an important issue. We have in the state of Minnesota, when a tornado or another disaster comes through, if it does not meet the standards for federal disaster declaration, we have a gap in terms of how our state participates in helping these local units of government solve the problem. And so that's what the direct assistance to Lesueur County is trying to get at. And then the other parts of the bill have been added because during the process of trying to help Lesueur County deal with some of the cleanup that is necessary in their lakes, we had come into some challenges in regards to how the DNR views their role in regards to this cleanup. And so what we're trying to do with this language is just make it clear that, yes, the waters are the waters of the state, and, yes, the DNR does have the responsibility to do those cleanups.
Okay. Questions? Representative Bryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Broad, I'm wondering if you're aware of any efforts on the state part to address that gap you talked about in funding for gap between the federal level and the state responsibility.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, and Representative Reinert, there has been attempts over the past number of years. I think that there is a state calamity act and some other things that are occurring. But as of recent times, there is no gap filler on the state level, and that's what we're trying to do with this legislation is just to recognize that even if it doesn't meet that standard, which, by the way, is roughly $6 million, it has a little movement with population changes, but if we don't meet those standards, it doesn't mean that the state does not have any responsibility to help out those local folks, and that's really what we're trying to do with this legislation.
Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chairman, this is a question for Mrs. Novak. Is there any statutes on the books now regarding the role of DNR, in this type of situation?
Ms. Novak?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Detmer, I'm not aware of any statutes. Most of the disaster assistance legislation that we have is through the Department of Public Safety, and it deals with emergency responses when there's a natural disaster.
Okay. No further questions of the author. When I get two more folks in the room, Representative Brown will move your bill, and we will re-refer it to the Representative Murphy's Committee, Education, Finance, and Economic Competitive Finance, whatever. Close enough. Everybody knows my intent. So, thank you very much, and we will make that motion when we get up.
Okay, thank you.
Well, Representative Nornes is going to do that for you. As amended. As amended.
Mr. Chair, do you anticipate a positive vote?
Well, I'll
convince my side to, these Republicans have all no on everything, so I'm sure they're going to help you out.
Well, Mr. Chair, we are here to help.
Representative Poppy has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I don't have a question, but as one who has been the recipient of the kindness of Minnesotans when it comes to either flooding or tornadoes, I do think that this is an important issue, and we do need to address the gap. And certainly, again, in Browns Valley, as people have been flooded, and with your situation, I know in the Mankato and St. Peter area in the past as well, it is something that it does bring the outpouring of neighbors and friends and community members and the state. When we all come together, I think it's a good thing. So I appreciate your efforts here.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just, I appreciate that, Representative Poppy. I neglected to make one comment, and that's exactly why we're bringing forward the language in regards to the fund, is that this isn't just a LeSueur County problem. While the specific situation that I brought the bill forward applies to LeSueur County in my district, these natural disasters happen everywhere. And so I wanted to make sure that it wasn't just targeting dollars to one place, but that we were setting up something that fills in that gap for everybody in the state.
Okay, thank you very much. Why don't we jump down to Representative Knuth. I see she was here. She still is here. Representative, you come down, House File 1716, and we will do the same for you, since I don't have a quorum yet. There's going to be a tornado in this room in a few minutes. We'll get some members here to start helping us move these bills along. Representative Knuth, welcome to the committee. You know the scenario here because of our lack of a quorum, so why don't you just go ahead and start presenting your bill, and then we will move it as members come in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And where?
House of 1716.
Where did you foresee moving it? Was it going to be laid over? Or?
This bill seems to be laid over because of the, it's a finance bill for our committee, and it'll just be laid over.
Okay.
Possible inclusion.
I have a couple amendments that haven't managed to make their way through the amendment process in quite the correct way. One is basically, do members have the H1716A1 amendment?
Did it get caught? We have, the council has copies. I mean, she's got the only copies. Do you have them in there? I don't see them in mine. We'll have Anders go make some copies, and you can explain. We've got two amendments here, or just one?
You have just one? Okay.
I just have one amendment.
One amendment.
Okay. There was supposed to be a second one drafted, and it hasn't come yet. But the A1 amendment basically should have been drafted as a bleed all. It's drafted instead as a you basically insert it. What this amendment does, it changes the language on the contamination cleanup grant program to include project costs that also include geotechnical corrections as part of a redevelopment project area that includes remediation. And when my testifier speak, you will it'll be clear why we'd like that additional language. The second amendment would be to appropriate $2 million to that particular grant program.
And will we be seeing that amendment, or?
I don't have that amendment. Is it possible to do that as an oral amendment?
It might be a little difficult, but we'll have counsel working on it. We can take section one, but that's not where the appropriation is going. It's going through for this new amendment to the existing program. Do you intend the A1 amendment to be delete all?
Mm-hmm.
And then it would have a an appropriation counsel.
Mr. Chairman, I think it might be easier if we used the A1 amendment the way it is drafted and then amended the appropriation section that's in the existing bill to be to the grant program under 116J.552.
That would be your suggestion. You do that for us, then Ms. Novak will. Representative Knuth is explaining the bill, and our witnesses are testifying.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the reason I'm bringing this bill forward is because a redevelopment project in the city of New Brighton has run into some problems with some geotechnical issues, having to do with some peat soil and a remediation site in the Northwest Quadrant redevelopment area. And I have the mayor and city manager from the city of New Brighton here to testify a little bit about that particular issue.
Mayor, welcome to the committee. Just identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, Steve Larson, Mayor of New Brighton. It's, again, a pleasure to be in front of this great body. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
Welcome.
The Northwest Quadrant is probably the last horizon for New Brighton as far as redevelopment. It entails about 100 acres, and we knew there was extensive contamination. What we didn't know about was the peat underneath the old refinery. So not only do we have the cleanup of solvents, but we also now found out from the MPCA that if we do any extensive cleanup to protect the area for housing and also to protect it from leaching into Long Lake, which is directly within 400 feet to the west of it, we are faced with some astronomical costs. What we're asking is some help to try to clean up. We're going to increase the property tax capacity of the parcel, the 100 acres, from about $20 million as it exists today up to about $300 million by the time it's all said and done. And when we build it out, the Board of Tax Increment District is retired. It will be about $500,000 in value that will go to the state every year during the project. It's a win-win for everybody. We get to develop contaminated soils, which include a dump on the east side of Old Highway right along 35W and the old refinery that's on the west side of Old Highway right north of 654. So it's a very focal point in our community. It's a chance to protect the integrity of the water supply and the lake, and anybody that lives there and uses the Long Lake Regional Park. And it's just something that we've already figured out that we're going to invest about $80 million in the project to get it going. We anticipated $20 million in cleanup, and that number has escalated to probably twice that much with the geotechnical changes that we've been faced with. So that's all I have. And with me is Dean Lauder, City Manager.
Welcome, sir. Just say your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dean Lauder. I'm the City Manager of the City of New Brighton. And I do appreciate everyone's time. This is a great honor to be here to talk about these issues. I think Mayor Larson summarized all of the main issues. Very importantly, the environmental issues are very large for us to deal with, and they do have significant dollar signs attached to them. I think that the complex nature of this redevelopment project was such that the city needed to take the lead on this to actually make it a reality and to bring it to fruition. And when it is completed, the mayor indicated that the tax base will have grown exponentially. It's our estimate that the state will also reap benefits from that financially year after year, starting at about $500,000 a year in tax revenue. Of course, that'll continue to grow as the market value grows with that redevelopment area as well. So it is a relationship, I think, that multiple levels actually benefit from. We are going to be providing some different kinds of life cycle housing there, about 700 to 900 units of housing. We anticipate about 2,000 to 2,500 jobs will result from that redevelopment project as well. So it is a very important project, not just to the city of New Brighton, but we believe to Ramsey County and the state of Minnesota as well. We appreciate any support that this committee can provide.
Okay. Any questions of any of the witnesses for our members that just came in? You know, we couldn't move the first bill and this one, so I'm giving you a choice of either bed without supper or detention. Which
we just put yes.
Detention always. Yeah, I thought teachers might like it. Okay, so I'm going to first take care of Representative Broad's bill. And if you don't mind, Representative
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 1017.
Representative Narnes moves House File 1017, be recommended to pass. And no, we'll do the amendment. And held over for possible inclusion in the Higher Education Workforce Development Omnibus Bill. And now, Representative Narnes moves the amendment H1017DE1, which the author wanted as a delete all amendment. And then this bill is going to be re-referred to the Education Finance and Economic Competitive Finance Division. But we're going to vote on the amendment first. Everyone's seen the delete all amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Now Representative Narnes renews his motion that House File 1017 as amended be recommended to Representative Murphy's Finance Committee.
Perfect.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Excuse us, Mayor and City Manager and Representative News. Now, we have, does Council have the delete all? You all have the 1716A1 amendment, to which I believe Ms. Novak will add the appropriation and the delete all, I'm assuming, and everything else. No? You're going to do it the other way? Okay, that's fine. First of all, we'll have Representative Moe move House File 1716 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion. And then Representative Moe will move the amendment entitled 1716A1.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Novak. Tell us what we're doing here today, would you please?
Mr. Chair, I would recommend that you adopt the amendment and then take up an amendment to the existing Section 1.
Okay. Then we have the A1 amendment before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Ms. Novak, on the face of the bill itself.
Mr. Chairman and members, page 1, line 6, to lead 3 million and insert 2 million. And page 1, line 7, delete everything after development and delete line 8, delete line 9, and insert 4, deposit into the grant account under Minnesota Statute Section 116J.551. So the section, which will now be Section 2, reads $2 million in fiscal year 2008 is appropriated to the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development for deposit into the grant account under Minnesota Statute Section 116J.551.
Okay. You've heard the amendment by Representative Moe. All those in... Are there any questions on that amendment? That is the current program as described by Representative Moe, already existing at Pete. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Any other questions to the author or the Representative?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Knuth, who owns this land? Does the city own it? I didn't know that. Maybe you said it, but...
Representative Knuth or Mayor or...
Mr. Chair, Mr. Lauder, We own the property.
Okay. And, of course, Representative Gunther, I'm assuming that once it's cleaned up, they're going to market it. But this is general fund money, and that, you know, and I, other than the language that Representative Knuth has added in her A1 amendment, the program already exists. This would help in this specific situation. Okay, no further questions. Thank you, Representative Knuth, for
thank you, Mr. Chair,
coming in front of the committee and helping
thank
us.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, you're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, I think I will go up right now. Representative Pocky.
Representative Rukavina, you, this is House File 1106, is that correct?
I'm here. Yeah, House File 1106. Is that what you got there?
That's what I got.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members, I'd like to move House File 1106 that be recommended to be passed and held over for possible decision in an omnibus bill.
Thank you. You may go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Madam Chair, members, I have a couple of folks with me that will be talking about the B'nai Abram Synagogue in Virginia. The Iron Range at one time had a thriving Jewish population with synagogues in four different cities on the Iron Range. This happens to be the second oldest structure standing in the state of Minnesota. It's a beautiful synagogue, and located in my hometown. Unfortunately, our Jewish population has been diminished, and the building had fallen into disrepair. And with me was a longtime Virginia family, and Phillips' mother, our parents, owned a grocery store, I believe.
No, Women's Ready to Wear.
Okay, Women's Ready to Wear, excuse me. And they had been trying to get their get possession of this building. It's a long, drawn-out thing, but they finally did, and the many of the now dispersed members of the Virginia Jewish community that are down here in the Twin Cities and other areas that want to preserve this, we've given some Iron Range Resource and Rehabilitation money, I believe $15,000 grant to start the process. The roof was leaking, the floors were buckling because the building hadn't been heated, and they did a great job of matching that money and starting the process. And this would, I was thinking of an appropriation, maybe $50,000 to $75,000. It's blank right now. That would require a match, but that's basically what the bill does. And I'll let the testifiers tell you a little bit about what they've done and hope to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Can this be heard? Yes, I believe
so. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with all of you. We were very appreciative and considered a privilege. We are asking...
If you would, please, first, just introduce yourself.
My name is Ann Shandling Phillips. I grew up in Virginia. Do you want some background information? My father grew up in Virginia, and my grandfather came as one of the many immigrants who came to the Iron Range in the 1880s and the 1890s, along with, I'm sure, Representative Rukavina's family. There were, at one point, it was like a gold rush in Virginia, with the iron ore, not gold. Things have changed in those years, and as Mr. Chairman said, the building has fallen into disrepair, and we, those of us who live in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and greater Minnesota, have always felt a certain nostalgia for the building, but also thought it was a beautiful, beautiful building that deserved preservation and deserved to be turned ultimately, possibly, back to the city of Virginia or to the community. In the meantime, to be used as a community resource for lectures, for concerts, for meeting spaces, and also to be a museum of the Jewish contribution to the Iron Range. It no longer can be used as a synagogue. It is no longer a religious building, but we're keeping the same name because that's what the Virginia community knows it to be. We've had several events in Virginia, and you do have a handout that describes much of the history. I don't want to go into it at any great length, but we've had tremendous encouragement and enthusiasm from the local citizens, from the neighbors, from the local mayor and the government offices, from the newspaper. We've had editorials printed on our behalf. We've also had tremendous amounts of encouragement from people all over the country in terms of economic dollars and from various organizations within the state, the St. Louis County Historical Society, many preservation groups, many national organizations, historical societies such as the one in Virginia, which I urge you all to go and see sometime if you ever have the opportunity. It's a magnificent little museum, and they will be our partners in running this building. We would like to ask for money to get to what we call Stage 3. We use the IRR money that Mr. Chairman spoke of to do some of the early construction. We put our own money in to do the roof and the gutters to save the building so it wouldn't further deteriorate. We now are about to start Stage 3, or we would like to start Stage 3. We're in the middle of Phase 2. Stage 3 would make the building more accessible to handicapped and would provide a kitchen and would make the building distinctly more usable. This will run, as we understand, about $120,000. Any help that could be given toward that goal would be well spent. I want to emphasize this is a building that will attract tourists, economic development, people from all over the country and even the world come up to northern Minnesota, as you all know, to go fishing, to go hunting, to canoe, and they stop in to see what's going on in Virginia. They go to the Virginia Area Historical Society, and this summer I had several calls for people knocking on the door. How do we get in? We want to see the inside of the synagogue. These people go there to eat, they go there to stay, they go there to spend money. And we, on the committee, so many of us are from northern Minnesota, we want to see the area thrive and live. It was a great place to grow up. We're grateful for our opportunities that we had to live there and go to school there. If you have questions on economics, Mike Friedman is my authority, our authority.
Thank you. Thank you. You can just go ahead, identify yourself, right, and then go ahead.
My name is Michael Bleehert. I live in Crystal, Minnesota. I'm a retired mechanical engineer with a great interest in this type of activity. So I've been a volunteer director on the Friends of Neighborhood Committee for a couple of years now, since its inception. And in your packet that you received, it shows that there's a total expenditure for this restoration of $350,000. Which, from the people that ran the reuse study, said that's a very reasonable amount of money. They're usually dealing with numbers in the $10 to $20 million to restore buildings. We've divided the work up into a couple phases, and as Ann said, we've already completed the stabilization of the building, which is basically a new roof. With the IRB money, we're restoring the sanctuary. With the money we're talking about now, we're talking about making the building usable, finishing everything but the handicapped accessibility, and then updates to the exterior of the building, such as new tuck pointing on some of the bricks. So it's a project that has great potential with minimal investment, at least when you compare it with other typical restorations. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Representative Norness.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think you said at the beginning that we own the building now. Who is we? Is that a nonprofit group?
We is a nonprofit organization which we call the Friends of the B'nai Abraham Synagogue. FBA we call it by short, but it is now a nonprofit organization.
501(c).
Any other questions? All right. Any final comments from Representative Rukavina or others?
I should just quickly, you know, there's many famous folks that came out of the Iron Range Jewish community. Of course, we all know Bob Dylan, but you didn't know that Representative Keith Simon is also an Iron Range. And Representative Senator Lack. So, you know, some of our other famous members. I think I saw on your little, and maybe coming around the pictures, and I'm not sure, but they had a number, a little plaque in the synagogue of World War II veterans. And I think I saw Simon, and I'm assuming that it could be Representative Simon's uncle or great uncle. Or
it could be.
I'm going to get to the bottom of that and make sure that he's supporting this. Thank you, members.
Thank you. It appears he's a co-author of the bill, so I would hope that he must be in support. Thank you very much for your testimony and for bringing this forward. We appreciate it.
Swigum, come up here. Swigum, welcome to the committee, Mr. Speaker. What is the title we gave you? Oh, Speaker what?
I can't pronounce it or spell it.
Speaker Emeran. Emeritus. Yes.
This I don't know what it means. Does it mean old? Is that what it means? Or,
it's used to be.
Used to be. Has been. Okay. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to hear this bill. Very exciting project down in southeastern Minnesota, for Mr. Chairman.
Why don't we have?
I move House File 1775.
Here we go. Representative Norris moves that House File 1775 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the Higher Ed and Workforce Development Bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, a very, very exciting project to southeastern Minnesota. It's a bioscience research park. But before I begin, Mr. Chairman, since this is a higher education committee, maybe I could take 20 seconds to let all the members of this committee know that one of our fine institutions, WSU, that both I and Representative Pawlowski represent, Representative Pawlowski actually more than myself, is in the final four of the basketball tournament tonight.
Oh, and they're winning too, right?
They're winning. They're awesome. Now, the reason I tell you that, Mr. Chairman, members, is that last year when I was still speaker and we had a groundbreaking in Winona for one of the Pasture Hall, I believe it was, which we appropriated in the past years, I made mention, Mr. Chairman, that if this basketball team, by the way, which won the tournament last year, the NCAA 2A, the Division II tournament, if they would win it again this year, that I would make sure that Memorial Hall would get taken care of in the bonding bill. Mr. Chairman, you now have that responsibility. Should they win tonight, and I think the championship game may be on Friday night, Mr. Chairman, Memorial Hall. You just have to remember that's the facility, the athletic facility there, and you take care of higher education. I just wanted to let you know that I have passed the responsibility on to you.
Svigum Memorial Hall. But you don't have to die to have this one named after you, right?
Just a little sick. To the bill at hand, Mr. By the way, I think the game is 6 o'clock tonight, and it's covered on TV. It might be 7, I forget, about Eastern Central Time, whichever it is. But the WSU has a great team. By the way, they beat the Gophers, in fact, this year, if you remember correctly. To the bill that's at hand, Madam Chairman, or Mr. Chairman, members, when Representative Welty drives home on Thursday night, which now it's Friday night. Excuse me, this week it's Saturday night.
Yeah, right. We get home.
Yeah, we keep moving it back a little bit from the family-friendly legislature, but when Mr. Welty drives home on Saturday night of this week, and he drives home to his farm, he drives by a very, very beautiful, a wonderful piece of ground on Highway 52 between Orinoco and Pine Island. It's actually in Olmsted County. Mr. Chairman, if most of you who probably recognize this spot, because if you drive to down Highway 52 to Rochester, you look off to the east, the left-hand side as you're driving down, you'll see a tremendous herd of elk.
Oh, yeah.
On a property down there.
You fight to shoot a couple when I'm going to Rochester.
So, the owners of this property, the previous owners, have let us all hang our lawn signs. Republican, Democrat.
That's what I was shooting at.
On the fences. But
of yours in particular,
most people, in fact, I think I've seen wealthy signs there myself. Not, maybe not. It's not quite in his district. But Mr. Chairman, members, it's identified as a piece of property because everybody sees these
hundreds of elk, is it not?
Oh, yeah.
Hundreds of elk there and about 1,700 acres. Beautiful, beautiful property. That property, Mr. Chairman, members, is set for an exciting expansion project of bioscience research park, a park that is very, very greatly needed as we look forward to the future of Minnesota, as we look forward to bioscience technology development. It's a park that is actually, or it's a ground that right now is out in the townships. It is not part of the city of Pine Island or the city of Rochester or any other city. It is out in the townships, but the city of Pine Island has had discussions with the townships involved. I believe there's two townships to have an orderly annexation of the property. Townships are in approval. This property has been bought by Power Investments, which will create a bioscience park of thousands of jobs, literally thousands of jobs, very good paying jobs that you can raise families with. These are very, very good jobs. Tower Investments and the development has spoken with the University of Minnesota. We have spoken with Rochester, with Mayo Clinic, obviously, with a number of other bioscience research of potential businesses that would be moving into the park area. The difficulty exists, members, is that since this is out in the township, not part of the city right now, there are some infrastructure needs, which are great. Infrastructure needs that would be utility needs that would be necessary to make sure that this park is served and that it is ready for the development to take place. The city will do the annexing. The city will be involved in the support of the project, the city of Pine Island now I'm speaking about. But there is going to be some appropriate need and help from the state to help this bioscience park go forward. Let me give an analogy. In northern Minnesota, Mr. Chairman, in the range area, I think we're doing some wonderful moving forward with jobs in direct reduced iron initiatives. And I believe that we have appropriated in the past, maybe in the bonding bill, some help for local communities for their infrastructure to help the infrastructure and to help the costs of this expansion of the direct reduced iron project. This is a wonderful project, Southern Minnesota Bioscience, and members of the committee I do have with me. I have John Pierce from Power Investment, who is the investing, the developers, the city administrator of the city of Pine Island, the mayor of the city of Pine Island, Paul Perry, who would like to speak to you about the project in a very, very quick and short period of time.
Mayor, welcome to the committee. Why don't you just identify yourself for the tape and tell us if you're a Democrat or Republican?
My name is Paul Perry, and I'm the mayor of Pine Island. And I'd like to thank you for a couple things. Thank you for having us in here to talk to you. I'd like to thank Representative Spigen for coming along with us and getting us on your agenda. And I'd like to thank you for a chance to wear a suit. Nobody's died, so. I'm a construction worker, and my neighbors trust me to be mayor, so this is all new to me. Pine Island's about 3,500 people north of Rochester. You all know that. We're about 2,200 square, 2,200 acres, the whole city. This development is 1,700. It's a little overwhelming for us. We're working on how do we expand into it? How do we service it? Tower's been really good about being forthcoming with what they know, how soon they're going to develop, how fast it's going to go. And the process is moving along. It's moving along well. It's just that Representative Spigen said, the infusion of money we need to get the thing over the hump is what we're here talking to you about. And I really think the bioscience part of their project is exciting. I mean, I get nervous about it because it's so much growth so quick for us. But at the same time, opportunity knocks you follow along. So, I really don't have much to add. I will answer questions if you have any. Other than that, I'm going to let John Pierce talked to you about what Tower's going to do out there, what their investment is and what they plan. So,
thank you. Pierce, welcome to the committee. Just identify yourself for the tape.
My name is John Pierce with Tower Investments. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. It is certainly a privilege to be before you. Tower Investments is a family-owned, we're a national real estate company, privately held, and this is the type of projects that we work on. We have industrial, office, medical facilities, hospitality. We are working on similar projects in California with an integrated medical facility, a new hospital, and so on, a new convention center, headquarters hotel, and hospitality in Nashville. So this is, we look for opportunities in places such as what we found here at with the Elk Farm. And like was earlier mentioned, it is a beautiful piece of property. We were attracted to the area originally because, first of all, it just has the right components for what we look for in a real estate development. It is an excellent location. There is a lot of emphasis by the state to bring in bio business. And what we saw was the opportunity, given the high-quality workforce, the high education levels for this area, that it had the proper components to for us to help along and provide a home to some of the bio business that would be coming into the state. In working with Mayo, working with the university, Rochester Area Economic Development, the people in Pine Island, one of the things that you find with a bio business park such as this is you have to respond to the market, but at the same time you have to push the market. There's a certain economy of scale, a certain size that is required, because these businesses otherwise will come into Minnesota, they'll take what they want, and then they'll go back to their respective states, California or Massachusetts or North Carolina, et cetera. That's what the Bio Business Alliance is working on, to bring these businesses, get them established in this area, and have them stay. We provide a home to do that, and it is... These parks typically run from about $1.5 million to all the way up to about 10 million square feet. They're large parks typically because you need that working together. These businesses work with each other. It has to have a certain size. This piece of property provides us with the opportunity to do that. There is an immediate need that we're going to respond to, that we will be building space for immediate tenants. We have the falls. We work closely with what we call strategic partnership with local companies, such as what we've done with the Falls and Heather Sharp. We work with them. We provide capital. We provide a certain amount of business acumen. They have the local knowledge. They have the expertise. It's a great partnership to make things successful, and that's what we're doing in Elk Run. Again, we thank you for the opportunity to be here and would be able to answer any questions. Thank you.
Questions? Representative Norton first, and then Mahoney.
Chair Gavina and presenters, could you tell me, you mentioned University of Minnesota and Mayo, and as you know, there's a bioscience building being built in Rochester, and I'm wondering if you're working in conjunction or if this is in a competitive nature with the building that's currently going up and the programs currently underway.
The very familiar with the project that's being built currently on the 9-story building, 6 floors of it are taken by Mayo Medical Ventures. We've had a lot of discussions with Gary Smith at Rochester Economic Development about that particular project. We actually work in conjunction with what that project is doing because there are different stages of bioscience research. That's very much at the incubator stage. As those companies develop, they get to an accelerator stage and they need places to move to. We hope to be working, a certain aspect of what we're doing is to provide a home to some of those businesses as they grow.
Okay, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Pierce, although I haven't spoken to you, I've spoken to some other people about this particular park that you're proposing. I'm not a big fan of keeping the elk there, but I hear a lot of other people are, so I guess I can go along with that. Now, you're talking 1.7 million square feet of biobusiness park. That's not going to be put up all at one time. Do you have a plan for how your time scale of development?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, This is a very long-term project. We anticipate a three-year phases, six three-year phases, and 18-year development. There is an immediate need for a couple hundred thousand square feet of space that we feel like we can fill the current people we're speaking with. That we would be doing in the first phase. We would also be doing the Falls development, which involves assisted living and integrated medicine facility. So that would be the initial phase, but this is a very long-term project, yes.
Representative Mahoney.
I don't know if you mentioned it while I was out of the room, but the Falls is already something that, I think it was 2 years ago, they were in a different location, but the Department of Economic went through their business plan and found them to be worthy of a bio grant from 2 years ago. I think that came down with them. It's a pretty exciting project. The 200,000 square feet that you're talking about early on, what type of biomanufacturing are you talking about? Are you talking biomanufacturing or bioresearch? And you know, there's multiple different layers or levels of bioresearch. Are we talking just manufacturing, or are we talking St. Jude's and that type of clean room facilities where you would do actual medical devices type clean rooms, which are, I don't want to do the numbers, that's just confusing.
Mr. Chairman, the Falls has some businesses that Heather had already worked with, Daisy Blue in particular, that will be having a manufacturing component to their facility of about 20,000 square feet. There will be, you have different types of bio business, and we're using that in a very broad term. Bio business, to a certain extent, includes just suppliers, vendors that are currently working with Mayo Clinic, that want to locate closer. Like I said, there will be a need, although this isn't an immediate need, for the research facilities such as what you're referring to with the clean rooms as those incubators move to that accelerator stage. And that is not something that we see in some of the initial spec buildings that we would be doing. It would be on subsequent phases.
Thank you.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Rukavina, and to the testifiers and Representative Swigum. I just want to be clear on the township's position on this. You said that the townships are or will be entering into an orderly annexation.
The orderly annexation agreement is already done.
It's already done. Yep. Okay, thank you for that clarification. I appreciate that. And then my second question.
Go ahead.
Representative Rukavina, and to Representative Swigum. So we are moving forward on the bioscience project in Rochester, and of course that was brought up, and we're hoping that we can fill that building. This will, in a way, be a little bit of a competition if you're going to be promoting this as a bioscience park. I'm just wondering what happens if we're not able to, in this area, what's the city going to do if they don't fill up that development? You know, the risk, I look at this as, it's definitely a good concept, but what about the risk? Because I've seen risk taken by another local city, and I know you're probably going to know which one I'm talking about, where they bought a significant amount of land. We're hoping that they'd be able to sell lots, and weren't able to sell lots in the end. Had to have an auction, so they took a big risk and a big cut there. And I'm just wondering, what's your contingency plan if we're not able to fill up this business park? Hopefully you do, but what happens if you don't?
Representative Swigum, do you want to handle that one?
Thank you.
Before you remember, Representative Belkin, Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that this is a private development of BioSense will be an enhancement to the BioSense effort going on in Rochester, and that Mayo has been involved in great discussion and great encouragement of this BioSense park at Fort Elk Rock.
Just to respond to that very quickly, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
We are working with Mayo Medical Ventures. We've had discussions with them as far as the needs that they have that are in addition to what they are doing. They do not view this as competition to what they're doing. And we are, in fact, going to the Bio 2007 conference. We have a booth there working with Rochester Area Economic Development, with Pine Island, with the state of Minnesota. This is very much a cooperative effort.
Abraham, the city administrator.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Abraham Algadi. I'm the city administrator, and Representative Andy Wilkie's concerns are obviously legitimate. These are the same questions we are asking of the developer, and no investment, whether it's public or private, in this case, will be a cheap investment. I think we are cognizant of two things as we progress on this development. One is market conditions, the regional environment, both in the bioscience field and in the general business climate. To answer your question on the competition, also, I'd like to add to what John just mentioned. Having Tower be involved in the region in general adds to the edge, the competitive edge that region would have, because they would have a greater reach, you know, nationally and internationally, actually, in terms of marketing and bringing talent and bringing investments from outside the area. We are at a crossroad in Pine Island and in much of southeast Minnesota, as you know, because of the changes that are happening to our infrastructure in the form of Highway 52, you know, the limited access goals of U.S. Minnesota Department of Transportation. That is bringing about maybe more development pressure in that quadrant than you would see probably elsewhere, maybe outside of the metro, to our region. Therefore, we need to be prepared in terms of having infrastructure, both sewer, water, streets, and what have you. And we're not going to go all out. We're going to, like the mayor, I like his analogy. He said, he was asking me, you know, I'm saying the scale of this project is large. He said, how do you eat an elephant? I said, I don't know, maybe you'll barbecue it. And he said, no, you eat it one bite at a time. And that's exactly what we're going to do. We know what's on the meal for the next 20 years, but we're going to deal with it one step at a time. We're not going to overextend ourselves, but rather we're going to work within market conditions as well.
Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering about the integrated health care, the complementary and alternative component of this, and the documents that you provided indicate that you're partnering with Mayo Clinic and the University of Minnesota. And I'm wondering if those will be the primary providers in terms of models for what you're doing, or if there are any other partnerships within the state, or if you're bringing in... If you've done this sort of model before and you're bringing a model in from another, you know, another state structure, I'm just wondering about that background.
Mr. Chairman, there are parts to the falls concept that are actually unique, and there are parts of it that are pretty much what we've done before with integrated medical facilities. Working with Dr. Bauer at Mayo, we have had discussions in a meeting with Dr. Sarah at the university. Those are discussions. I don't want to overstate where we are with those, but there is discussions and there's cooperation and there's a lot of enthusiasm for the Falls Project and what we're doing with the integrated medical facility, that whole healthy living campus and kind of a living laboratory, because it provides so many opportunities that's for all these different groups to grow.
Okay, Representative Mahoney again.
Mr. Chair, and it's more of a comment than a question. To those of the members of the committee that don't quite understand the Falls Healthy Living by Nature concept, how should I say this? I was at least skeptical when it was first brought to me, and actually, I was very skeptical, and they had to come and convince me, because of my committee, that it was a valid business, and they actually did a very good job of it. It took them over an hour and a half, but I'll give them credit. They slogged through, convinced this pipe fitter that healthy living was what we were supposed to do, and there's a viable issue there. And I want to compliment Representative Swigum for having come and talked to me about this, and asked me some questions about it. I have been supportive of this, and I told him and I told everyone else involved with it that I thought it was a good idea and it should be explored. I'm interested in seeing us see what we can do to help this move forward. Any kind of competition in bioparks that we put into the state, whether it's here or in the Twin Cities or in St. Cloud or any other town in the state. I don't think it's in competition. I think it's a healthy partnership with all places in the state. Hopefully we can grow this industry in the state large enough that it could handle 1.7 million square feet in Rochester, along with nine stories or whatever in downtown Rochester, any place else we can. But I guess the city needs to, it'd be nice to make sure that we know all the parts to the deal and who is investing what in, I believe this is infrastructure, and whether the state's paying its entire cost or the city and the state and Tower are sharing it. But as this is just kind of, we're talking about the project, I don't know if it's the right place for it to be brought up. But I think it's a good project. I hope we can do something for them.
Representative Swigum, is there maybe Mr. Algotti or Mayor, the Tower Investments owns all of the blue, the 1,700, whatever it is, 73 acres. Are you bringing just this $6 million proposal to bring sewer and water to the edge of the property? And then Tower Investment runs it through their property like we normally do up on the range with public infrastructure?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I believe it is just to the edge of the property. It does not, penetrate the property all the way to the other side. We're bringing it at a minimum to the edge of the property because by our own laws and subdivision regulations, the developer is responsible for developing within. But to clarify a couple of points, if some of you had seen the official map for Highway 52 that was put forth here about 4 or 5 years ago by Department of Transportation, it also shows a number of county roads that are traversing this area, east and west. One of them would be Olmsted County 5, meeting at the heart of where this development is, then progressing farther east towards Plainview, actually, County 12, which becomes County 249 or 247. So those are the only two county roads. There will be a number of collector roads, and we have different arrangements on those. But for the most part, if you see this map, most of them are, city streets that the developer would be responsible for.
And Representative Swigum, I don't know if it qualifies, maybe Beth can help me, for the wastewater infrastructure fund at deed, maybe Mr. or Representative Gunter, would it qualify for something like that, at least on the public part of it? Mr. Algotti?
I don't know if it qualifies for WIF or not. It's something that I haven't looked into. Mr. Chairman, the bill as presented to you with the general fund appropriation, to be directly and brutally honest, is the bill that was brought over to me by Senator Murphy. The Senator and I worked together as we met with Power Investments, we met with the city, and Steve took it upon his responsibility to draft the bill. And I don't know if he had checked with the potential of the WIF fund or not. I cannot tell you whether it's a senator, but this was the bill that Senator Murphy then sent over to me as he drafted.
And Representative Swigum, the fact that this is an economic development project and it's publicly owned because it's for sewer and water infrastructure would certainly qualify it for bonding, wouldn't it? Would it not?
Mr. Chairman, you and I have spoken about that, about the potential of it being bonding, similar to the project in Northern Minnesota that we talked about. We did talk about that as an option, an opportunity, and again, let me just rephrase it. This was the desire of Senator Murphy to go this way.
Representative Poppy, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I did. Actually, it's under the project outline, the institutional amenities or things that you would have there. So under education, the university campus and elementary school, and then I understand under the health fund job and cost analysis, Exhibit D, it talks about a high school, elementary school, daycare, university facilities, and government offices. Just wondering, I guess we are higher ed here as well, and wondering about university facilities and if someone would be able to describe what kinds of educational expectations there will be with this ELK run.
Mr. Pierce, is that your valleywig?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. We are speaking with the school district, first of all, on elementary school facilities and high school facilities as part of the upfront development, where we provide some land for them to do that and so on. So that's part of it. The university facilities is something that it's part of the collaboration with the Falls and with the overall integrated medicine and the Healthy Living Campus. Beyond that, it's a work in progress. So there's no current university facilities that are planned at this location, other than the discussions that we're having.
Okay, thank you very much. No further questions. And thank you, Representative Swigum, and testifiers. And Mayor, you go back and pull on wrenches or weld or whatever you got to do. You did a good job in that suit.
Thank you. Thank you very much for being a member. Thank you.
Representative Solberg, House File 1641. Representative Slocum moves House File 1641 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Murphy, while you were gone, we moved a bill to your committee. We actually moved a bill down here. Representative Solberg, welcome.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for hearing this bill. This early winter, when I was in a Council of State Governments meeting in Phoenix, Arizona, I met with Michael O'Brien from Washington, D.C., and had kind of an interesting conversation on internship programs that his nonprofit group is offering. And we talked a little bit, and I think we said he would like to have that same type of opportunity for college kids in the state of Minnesota. So we have communicated since, and he's here to kind of give you a description of the program and the needs that, and an opportunity for if Minnesota can come up with a little bit of money, that they would be able to have some good internship programs in the Washington, D.C. area under the tutelage of this group. So I would ask Mr. O'Brien to give some testimony.
Mr. O'Brien, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Michael O'Brien, and I'm the Director of State Relations for the Washington Center for Internships and Academic Seminars. I would like to thank you for considering the Washington Center's request for funding to provide opportunities for Minnesota's college and university students to attend our internship and academic program in Washington, D.C. The Washington Center is an independent, nonprofit educational organization founded in 1975. Our mission is to provide integrated academic and work experience for college students and young professionals to prepare them for lives of achievement and civic engagement. The Washington Center has a track record for training the next generation of leaders in public service through its academic internship program. Currently, the Washington Center brings between 1,700 and 2,000 college students and recent graduates to Washington each year. The Washington Center interns come from every state and many foreign nations. Almost all receive college credit for their internship thanks to cooperative agreements with more than 500 colleges and universities. About one-third of the Washington Center interns are students of color, and more than 85% receive financial assistance. While at the Washington Center, interns work at least 32 hours per week, enroll in one 3-credit academic course, and participate in the Leadership Forum. The Leadership Forum is a series of lectures with national figures, small group meetings with members of Congress, program-specific seminars, and service learning projects. Through the Leadership Forum, students learn leadership skills and the importance of civic engagement, creating the foundation for a lifelong contribution to state public service as seen through the work of our alumni. 90% of the students in our program return to their home communities to apply what they've learned. Among our 36,000 alumni, more than one-third are, or at one time, public service professionals. The Washington Center currently collaborates with 14 states and U.S. territories to provide funding for scholarships. The Washington Center's State Initiative Program is designed to enable students to experience a semester in Washington at a cost comparable to what it costs them at their home college or university. The Washington Center will use state funds to leverage additional funding in the federal and private sectors for Minnesota students. One example of how we will do this is our effort for funding in the 2000 7 Farm Bill reauthorization. The Washington Center is requesting federal funds for students interested in renewable energy and biofuels, which will be available to states that appropriate funds at a 2-to-1 federal to state match. We will be working with Representative Peterson to ensure that this is part of the Farm Bill reauthorization. Recognizing that Minnesota is a natural leader in this field, the Washington Center hopes that Minnesota joins us in this effort. The investment in the lives of these young citizens has as much value as it does for them as it does for the communities to which they will return. These may be future state legislators, or they will be doctors, lawyers, teachers, or community activists. To paraphrase our deceased founder, Bill Burke, these students will be improving the state of Minnesota one neighborhood at a time. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Solberg. Any other comments?
One question, if I could have, for the staff. The bill right now talks about $40,000 for fiscal year 2008. And I probably need to have it drafted in such a way that we have a little bit of flexibility in case it's not all spent in the first year, that it can be transferred over to the second year of the biennium. So if staff can kind of draft some kind of an amendment that would help us do that. In talking with Mr. O'Brien, he expects that most of it will go out in the first year, and it is a pilot project, so it will be one-time money as well. But I do think I want to be able to give the center a little bit of flexibility, and if they don't get everything spent this first year of the biennium. And then while staff does that, I noticed that there was a question.
There's no lack of you. Have a suggestion for us, or?
Mr. Chair, I would suggest that you add at the end of line 10, any amount spent in the first year is available in fiscal year 2009. Mr. Chair, and Representative Solberg, the bill also says that it begins with the fall semester of 2007 and the appropriation doesn't begin until July 1, 2007. Oh, I guess that works.
Yeah, I think I had that same question when I saw the bill the first time. And Mr. Chair, staff also, we probably should add that it's an understanding that it's a pilot project and one-time appropriation. If you want to add that on, that would be fine. And if someone would be so kind as to move those amendments, I would appreciate that.
Now, Representative Solberg, if this bill does make it, my CA and fiscal analyst have told me that maybe it should be a grant to the Office of Higher Education for a But we can fix that up if we decide to do it. But we will offer that amendment right now. Just read it as it'll read then.
Mr. Chair, members, page 1, line 10, after the period, insert, any amount not spent in the first year is available in the second year, period. This is a one-time appropriation.
Okay, Representative Mahoney moves that. All those in favor, signify this. Any questions on it? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Any other questions to Representative Solberg? Representative Norris.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg. How many students would this $40,000 cover, and how would they be selected?
Mr. Chair, I would think I would rather have Mr. O'Brien answer that question, because, quite frankly, I don't know.
All of the students at the Washington Center are students at their home colleges or universities. So they are selected by their home colleges and universities. So we will work with those colleges and universities to select the students. In terms of number of students, we will work with Susan Hegard and her office to determine the appropriate scholarship amount. Our average state scholarship right now is in the $4,000 to $5,000 range. So you're looking at 10 to 12 probably students
at that level.
Mr. Chairman, and as far as how they're chosen, is there some kind of a criteria? Is it, what is that based on?
Again, that's something that we would work with Susan Hegar's office. There is a baseline criteria for the Washington Center, and that is a second semester sophomore and above with a 2.7 GPA or higher. And what we do is work with colleges and universities to determine the right students for the institution and for the state. The language that we have in the Senate specifically targets first-generation college students, economically disadvantaged students, working to ensure that we have a rural-urban balance. So those kinds of criteria will be involved in what comes out of Susan Hegar's office. But we try to give as much flexibility to the state and the colleges and universities to select the students as long as they meet the baseline qualifications.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have three questions. Mr. O'Brien, do I understand correctly that this program already exists and it's just that Minnesota hasn't participated?
That is
contributing
as a state partner, correct.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, Mr. O'Brien, what do you do about the students' living conditions and how do you protect their safety?
Mr. O'Brien. We sent Representative Solberg out there.
those are good questions. The Washington Center guarantees housing for all students accepted into the program. Students can opt out if they have family in the area, but we do guarantee student housing. There is a cost associated with that, and that's part of what the state funding will cover. Our housing is professional style. Students live in blocks of rooms in mainly the Washington suburbs. There is a block of rooms on Capitol Hill, but mainly in Northern Virginia and in the immediate suburbs in Maryland. While it's professional living, we do have 24-hour RA staff that kind of provide that safety net. Even though we're encouraged the independent living, we do provide that safety net that we know students need and use.
Mr. Chair, what about their personal safety in the internship that they receive and with people that they're working?
We work very closely with all of our intern sites. Each intern is assigned a program advisor. It's about 20 to 25 program advisor students per program advisor. And these are students that will work. I have worked closely with probably 90% of the places that students will intern. If it's a new place, they'll work even closer and make sure that the setting, the experience is comparable to what a first job out of college will be. So we have not only the residential side, we do have program advisors who work closely with the students throughout the semester, ensuring that work experience is also a safe and beneficial experience for the student. Does that answer your question? We're not necessarily on site, but we do work closely with all of our placement sites to ensure that it's a quality placement and a place where the student will feel safe and comfortable. If they do not feel safe and comfortable, we will find them an internship that they do.
And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Brown, they're with businesses predominantly, right? And we're not just sending people off to be junior lobbyists or something like that.
While we do have a Congressional Leaders Program that places students on the Hill, if it's done in Washington, D.C., we're placing students. Our two largest programs are mass communications and media, so it's students in the media fields, television, radio, newspaper. Our second largest program is the law and criminal justice program, so it's students in law firms and DOJ.
DMV lobbyists represent them.
we do have a small number of students that are in lobbying firms. The vast majority are not. They're in congressional placements. They're in media placements, legal placements.
We get the idea. We got to get moving here. So, okay, Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps it's more of a comment, but I'm just wondering about the time frame. If we would allow this starting July 1st, and then you have a start in the fall semester, that would make it difficult probably for students to be identified or to be able to apply if they are not necessarily aware of it, because they may not be in summer school, so they may not be available. So as far as the money, I guess it probably might not be up and running quite by fall semester, maybe more so in spring semester for
but
the beyond.
I think your amendment represents that we'll carry it over.
I think so.
It'll still be available. It'll be, if program gets the word out, it'll carry over. Representative Wertman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Solberg, do you know if Minsky or the University of Minnesota have any similar programs to this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hortman, I do not. They may have. I'm not aware of it. I was made aware of this as I attended the conference. But it was an opportunity for our students in Minnesota to have a quality internship.
Ms. Fine is shaking her head up there from Minsky that Minsky has a program. So maybe you can get that information. And speaking of information, I believe that... Thank you, Representative Solberg.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir, Mr. O'Brien. And we have the minutes, which Representative McFarland would probably like to move for the our 30th meeting.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative McFarland moves the minutes from Tuesday, March 20th. Are there any additions or corrections? If not, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Representative Bly moves House Bill 2152. He recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Go ahead.
Thank you. House File 2152 hopefully won't generate so many questions, and we can move it quickly because it doesn't have a fiscal impact. But this deals with the Higher Education Facilities Authority and allows them to increase the limit from $800 million to $950 million in the Revenue Bond Authority. And I have John Corbett here from Minnesota Private Colleges to talk about.
Mr. Corbett, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is John Corbett from the Minnesota Private College Council, and I think my statement is less than 1 minute. The Minnesota Higher Education Facilities Authority has provided economical financing of capital projects to Minnesota's private colleges and universities since it was created by the legislature in 1971. HEPA issues tax-exempt bonds, the proceeds of which are loans to institutions to acquire, construct, or refinance projects. The bonds are repaid by the borrowing institutions and secured by reserves and collateral offered by the borrower. The bonds are not the debt of the state, nor do they affect the state's credit rating or debt limits. HEPA's operating costs are paid from the fees charged to the borrowers. HEPA has never requested nor received a state appropriation. The statutory debt limit for HEPA has been gradually increased, most recently in 2003, when it was raised from $650 million to the current limit of $800 million. And I think with the if this bill passes, it would probably be 2011 in that range before we're back again. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Corbett. Representative Nornis, do you have a question?
No, I just, Mr. Chair, wanted to say this is a good thing for us to do, and end of discussion.
There you go. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
We might actually get through our bills, except that's why I always save mine for last, because I can say we got to adjourn at 2 o'clock. Can I present this right from here? Nobody has a problem with it. I don't have any testifiers. Members, I'd like to move House File 820. You recommended the pass and held over for possible inclusion. And in a nutshell, what this bill does is repeals the committees that were set up, I think, 2 years ago in statute on the Board of Regents selection in a prior system that was set up creating the Regents Advisory Board, if I'm not mistaken. And members, I never supported either one of those bills. In fact, I believe I spoke against the statutory proposal that came out of the higher education bill 2 years ago when Representative Nornis was chairing the committee. And I said, why would the legislature give up authority that it has in the Constitution? Because the Constitution, in the end, is what rules. And Article 13, Section 3, I believe it is, adopts all of the language that is in the university charter, including the Board of Regents election. I know a lot of people think that the election process is cumbersome, but then change the Constitution. It's an election. I actually thought the process was less political. Representative Murphy is the only one, I believe, on the committee. Representative Clark, too, if she were here. I thought the process... No, but I'm talking about in the old days. That we're here when people would come around, knock on your door and say, I'm running for office, just like all of you do. Because it is an election, and it says that. And so that's what the proposal does, because in the end, the authority to elect the Board of Regents at a joint convention of the legislature rests in all of us as individuals who can vote for whomever we want. And I actually thought the Republicans were going to propose offer my name up this year, but I was waiting for it, and it didn't happen. So.
It didn't happen.
So that's the bill, and we'll open it up for discussion. Representative Wortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if we were to adopt this, would it go back to the process that it was prior to those committees being established?
Yes. It would be just like it was when I came here in 1988, where you got a call from one of your constituents, whether it was the 8th District or the at-large, and they said, you know, I'm running for, I'd like to be on the Board of Regents, and I'm running for office, and can you give me some pointers on how to do it, and here's why I want to run. And then they go around and knock on all of your doors, and you don't have to see them. See, I've never not let anybody in my office. Oh, I take that back. There was an iron mining lobbyist that couldn't come in for a few years, but I let him back in after that, too. But, you know, so that's the way the process would work.
Mr. Chair, I liked that process better. I felt like I knew more about the candidates in the 2005-2006 session than this year. I knew a lot less about them. I had to go on faith of what people on the committee thought. And maybe people on the committee had a good experience, but I liked the old thing where we actually had more interaction with the candidates. I know it's very difficult for the candidates, but that's what running for election is.
Thank you. Representative Norton.
Mr. Chair, I as you guess, I probably would speak against your bill here. I was involved with the developing of the current legislation. And it was a bipartisan group that got together and agreed that the old system was not working very well. Every time we'd go through that, it was just horrendous. And I had experience with candidates that started the process and because of the time commitment and all the rest of it, quit. And so the feeling was that we were having good qualified candidates choosing not to go through because of just the pain and agony we put them through. So this bipartisan group got together, and it didn't eliminate the election. We all had a chance, as you saw the other night, and you could, in the end, nominate other people. But it kind of streamlined a little bit the process so that those that went through the screening of this advisory council, I think, felt that they had a good hearing. And I just think going back to where we were is taking another step backwards. I'd like to see you improve what we've maybe started with, if there's a way to do that. But to go back and just say, well, we'll do it like we always have, I think most will agree that isn't a very good system, even though you did it for a long time.
Representative Norris, I'm repealing the system that your constituent complained about also, because that was the advisory council. Then they'd have to go in front of the advisory council, and then they'd have to go in front of, I think, the higher education committee and the K-12 committee. But I am getting rid of that too. I'm going back to where, hey, Mary Jones wants to run for the Board of Regents from Fergus Falls, and she calls up her legislator and she says, Bud, I want to run for it. And you say, you know, fine, I'll help you out. And she goes around and she knocks on our doors, just like you, when you run for an election.
I used that one example. That was not the reason that we changed the plan. It was because everyone agreed that what we were doing was not working. I just used that local example as one.
But what I'm saying, Representative Norris, is I'm also, this repeals that process too, and it goes back to pre-Bud Norris. BBN before Budner, how do you say BBN anyhow, and goes to where
I don't think
dual was set in the Constitution.
I don't think there was a perfect system, so you know.
Well,
I just thought that we made.
I didn't understand that it wouldn't be the system that.
This past election was the first time we had tried to use the new plan, and I think there was some misunderstanding on some people as to how it should have worked, and it didn't go exactly as people thought it should.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Representative Norris, but I don't know. Was there a bill, maybe staff can help me out, that was the result of that language that came back 2 years ago, or was that winging it in the conference?
No, there was a bill.
Was there a bill?
Yeah.
I don't really make a call.
Mr. Chairman, both the House and the Senate in 2005 had proposals to change the election process. The end result was worked out in the conference committee, different than either of the bills.
Right. Okay. But it had bipartisan support.
It was winging it.
And the Senate and the House, again, with an attempt to try and make this better for everybody. And I guess, you know, I admit it probably isn't perfect, but it's a free vote, I guess.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was elected well after you were elected also in 2002, but I was I'm not familiar with the process as you're referring to that goes back farther. But in the process of actually developing what we currently have in statute, we had a lot of discussion, as I recall, I was on the committee last year or 2 years ago when we did this, that talked about the process as it had gone back in history and that it didn't work very well when there was no guideline either. And so that's why we initially had some statutory language that put some kind of instruction as to how the electionship was going to work, and then that wasn't working well. So this is what came out of the next attempt. I guess my perspective is this, and I don't fault you for putting this bill in, and I don't agree with it. But I'm a graduate of the University of Minnesota, and I was pretty excited when the first opportunity came to be on the selection or the committee of the joint committees that actually did some of the preliminary stuff and selected the slate that would go to the floor. But I guess I was appalled when I saw the process. I mean, I thought it was one of the most politically charged, unfair processes for the candidates who come to this process thinking that they're going to be judged on the merits of who they are and the skills and the talents and the leadership abilities that they bring to the table to run for this position. And it turns out to be a kind of a political comedy. And I guess that's what concerns me. And so I guess maybe you don't agree with that. And maybe that's where we have a difference in understanding of the process. But I guess... From the standpoint of the university, my objective as a legislator is to have a process that encourages the best people to run. I don't care if they're Republicans, Democrats, Independents, whatever. It doesn't matter. But so we get the best people with the best skills, with the best leadership ability that can bring that to the table and not have to be dragged through all of this political quagmire to get through the process. That's what concerns me. And I don't see what you're doing as getting us any closer to that. And that's why I don't think we need to be jumping ship from what we have. I think the best thing we could do is to try what we have. We didn't even do it last time. I mean, we didn't even follow the new statute. And we don't have to because it's a constitutionally driven issue. There's no misdemeanor penalty or whatever for not doing this. But I understand that. And so technically, we still have not lost the ability to elect it. We haven't given anything away as a legislature because we don't have to follow this. But I think the what we could do is we could at least make a commitment to try and make this process a process that isn't so charged with the political energy that's around here, and make it something that is maybe better for the candidates, better for the university, and I just think we would all be better off in that process. I think this, what we have in statute now, moves us one step closer to that if we would just give it an opportunity to work.
Quickly, Representative Eastland, if you think there were no politics in the advisory council, I would argue otherwise. If you think there was no politics in the governor's proposal, I would argue otherwise. And An election is political. I don't care if it's in your church or in your Boy Scout club or in your class, class clown. I won that election, by the way, in 12th grade. But anyway.
Mr. Chair, the fact that the governor chose to continue or to reappoint two of the regents currently sitting on the board, to me, would indicate that's not political. You know, they've been there. There's a track record. They've done a good job. And what do? You know, we kind of just kicked them out.
Well, we heard that's a very political move. For the members that weren't here, and Representative Eastland and I, and I think Representative Bruce maybe, and Representative Murphy, just for the rest of your information, Ms. Hegart told us that the governor never talked to any of the candidates. Ms. Hegart and two other people made the decision who was going to be on the Board of Regents. And to me, that's pretty political because I got the right in the end to do
it. I believe there were three on that selection.
Where she said, I and two other people, is what she said. Yeah. Representative Mahoney.
No, I'm going to pass.
Representative Mull.
I'm ready to vote too.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I agree with you on the issue. I agree with you on the politics. The olden way was political. The second way was political. The third way was political. And this was political, no matter how it's done, because if it's an election and because they have to be selected or pared down by now the advisory committee, that's political. And so it depends on which political you want to follow. The political in the Constitution and make it more direct, or do you want to go through these steps that we've been having? I don't see that since we got the advisory committee and we've got these other steps to follow, that we've gotten any less of the best candidates for region. We always use the term, as Hegart used the term, best. I question, what did she mean by best? We all have a different image of what best is. But the way that we had before the present situation and the advisory committee before that was the best of that time period. It took us for over 100 years for the university be one of the top 10 universities in the country. It surfaced well. No matter what way we do it, if we have politics, we're still going to have someone's best. But I think each legislative district or congressional district had much more of a voice in who was going to represent their district. And the legislature as a whole had much more of a voice as to who were going to be the at-large people. And it seems to me that was our charge by the Constitution of the state, and we should go back to that. And we have the ability to select who the best are at any given time.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bruce.
Okay.
Representative Bruce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it was a great disappointment. I have not served on it before, so I was excited about serving on it. But I must say, I have heard about it ever since I've come, which is now this is my seventh year, and how political it was. But this was embarrassing. I was embarrassed to be a part of it, and I'm sorry to have to say that. But to me, I mean, this is the University of Minnesota. And it should not, politics can get into it, but we should rise above that. And I, all of us, and I'm including myself, and when we look at that, it should be a professional screening process. That's the one concern I would have about the process of somebody just comes in and says, I want to run, and maybe it isn't quite that easy. I'm not sure how you just came in and decided who was going to run. But I liked the idea of what was set up, and I know there was a lot of discussion went into the last years to put this process together. And so it seemed to me when that Bob Vanosik and running it, and they all were in agreement, and that was bipartisan of the ones they were bringing forth. I mean, I thought it was bipartisan because we had both Republicans and Democrats there bringing this forth. And when we had the recommendations, and then we did not follow the process from that point on. But I guess the point I would like to make is, to me, it should be a very professional screening process. So I would like the idea of being able to screen candidates to run instead of just bringing everyone off the street.
Well, Representative Ruth, you can screen all the candidates as they come to your office. And you can, you know, I mean, that was one of the problems. A lot of people said, well, I don't like that. I've got other things to do. Well, that's one of the charges. You raised your hand that first day you got elected, and you said, I agree to uphold the Constitution. And I'm sorry, folks, but part of the Constitution is you get together in a joint convention and you elect the region. And that's basically what this does. Representative Norton.
I was just going to point out that everyone had a chance to nominate that evening, so you know, we followed the Constitution. I was just going to say, one of the things that this advisory...
Thank you, because that makes my point.
One of the things the advisory council tried to do was also balance gender and diversity and all the rest of it, and we rejected that. The House and the Senate rejected some of that, and I think that was wrong.
I don't know. We elected a... women of Chinese descent, I think she is, and we elected a woman of Spanish descent, and we elected a Norwegian, Hey, why don't we look on the Supreme Court? We got three Andersons. We got to be an Anderson to get elected to the Minnesota Supreme Court, and one Hanson. Let's put some bonds on there. So anyhow, that's a whole other issue. I think we did a good job with diversity that night. Okay, members, you've got the bill. We're not voting on it. It's possible inclusion. So with that, we need to adjourn.